front of the curtain. So I want to say good evening to everyone. This is the BI Power Hour. We've been doing this for a couple years now. Has anyone been here in previous years? I see one gentleman here, a brave gentleman. How many people are wearing their t-shirts from a previous year? Pay attention to it's just this guy. Okay, so you're going to be everyone's favorite person, but we'll get to that in a minute. Oh, pay no attention to the screen either. Pay no attention to the screen either. So we have a special treat tonight. We've got a variety of people from Microsoft. We also have our first ever non-Microsoft presenter, Peter Myers, who is a SQL Server MVP, is going to be joining us. I'm going to have to stand over on this side where my pointer works. There we go. So technology is my friend. This particular piece of technology, not so much. We don't get along very well. So this is all scripted. Your laughter tells us that it's going exactly as we rehearsed it. So all of this frenetic activity, we've been like getting the timing down to the second over the last months as we've worked towards this. So at some point, we'll have our thing back. So I'm going to flip to the next slide just to remind me what we have going on. So I rely on this. We've got a black-on-black font. You guys have seen Metro, all the Metro-style slides that we're using. The new Metro look, which hasn't made it into Windows 8, or at least not the public builds, actually has black tiles with black text on a black background. And in related news, I'm now announcing my transition to the user experience team for Windows. That was my design. I'm glad that it's going over well. We get customer feedback, which means a lot to us. So if you've been here for previous years, there we go. So we have demos. That's pretty much all we have. We have stories to go around the demos, but the demos drive the session. We guarantee that you will not learn anything useful. If any accidental learning does take place, we can't be held responsible for this. We actually added this as a disclaimer because in previous years we have received negative critical feedback from attendees saying, I did not learn anything useful in this session that I can use in my workplace. And we're going to have fun while we're doing it. You guys have probably seen in the news that the world is ending this year, right? Different people have different theories about why this is. We're going to look into some of them during this session, but we wanted to explore this theme. So some people believe one thing, some people believe in others. Some people are saying that this is not actually true. I personally believe that this is industry propaganda. You remember those guys who kept saying unbreakable for all those years? Yeah, they don't want to believe this either. I think that they're just jealous that our... They're jealous that our product had a major blockbuster Hollywood motion picture made about it years before the software actually shipped. And, you know, they're paying for product placement in some recent action movies. Here we have entire movies dedicated to our tool. So it's kind of a hard thing to top. Speaking of tops, we have good news and bad news. So we're, you know, traditionally the BI Power Hour, one of the things that defines the session are the projectiles flying from the stage into the audience. So that's why you had to sign the waiver on the way in. We've given away t-shirts and beach balls, and you know, I have a luggage tag, I think. So this year, keeping in mind with the Mayan theme, trying to riff on this to the greatest extent possible, we actually ordered two pallets of SQL Server logo Mayan monoliths. Took 2 months to get this through LCA approval, but we actually made it work. The problem is the plane was delayed on the way here. So in all honesty, we have logistical issues. Point the finger at me if any fingers need to be pointed. We're not going to be throwing into the audience today. The gentleman over here, however, at some point during the show, he is going to take off his shirt and throw it to one of you. So you'll have your $5 at the end of the night, sir. So with no further ado, hopefully, with no further ado, we're going to transition over to one of these demos. Depending on what shows up on the screen next, it may be Amit, it may be Julian Allen. We're going to find out in just a second. So how are we doing? It's going to be Amit, isn't it?
I think Amit is okay. Probably a better idea.
So as an intro, Amit is a member of the Office team. Has anyone ever seen Office used for a BI application? So you guys are raising your hands. You realize this. And if you've been paying attention, if you're using Microsoft technologies, you've seen Office integrated more and more into Excel and SharePoint and other Office applications, or BI integrated into those things. But we were hearing through focus groups, the industry, analysts, Forrester, Gartner, and so on, they didn't really believe that Office was a key part of our BI strategy. Because Office wasn't featured at the BI Power Hour, this is why we try to have the Office team here each year to co-present and show some of the crazy BI tricks that their tools can do. So with no further ado, it's over to you, Amit.
Hi. I think it's one thing to say when the world will end. It's a whole nother thing to say how the world will end, right? So I want you to look at the next five pictures real carefully, because they offer clues to what I think is going to happen next. Anyone see it yet? Anyone? Yes, yay.
Throw in your shirt.
Yes, aliens. So many people believe that aliens have visited us throughout the history of our planet. And many people believe that Mayans were an alien race too. I don't think they were ever wiped out. They just blended amongst us, right? And they're hiding, waiting for 2012 to come to the set date, and they'll rise against us. I think that with such a large crowd here, there's a good possibility that there might be an alien or two amongst us today. In fact, I've gotten suspicious of some of my friends and some of my coworkers. So what we'll be doing today is we'll be using Excel and Power Pivot to figure out which of my friends are possibly aliens. So what I did was I turned to the world's largest human database. Any guesses what that is? Yes, Facebook. So I looked up, I used Facebook's Open Graph API to get information about all of my friends without letting them know I was doing this. And I looked at some of the key ET drivers, the place of birth, their education, their employment, and what they like. So it turns out aliens like reality shows a lot. Well, I'm not really talking about our reality shows like The Real Housewives or Jersey Shore or The Biggest Loser. I'm talking about alien reality shows like The X-Files or The Fringe. So without further ado, let's look at the list of possible aliens. But before I do that, I have to warn you guys, once I reveal this list, there's a high possibility that the aliens will retaliate. Are we okay? Should we proceed? Okay, let's go. So, as I said before, I got a list of all my friends from Facebook, just the basic information, right? And I have information like their name, of course, birth date, and interestingly, their hometown where they were born. And what I was able to find was list of UFO sightings since 1930. And using Power Pivot, I was able to create relationships between those two tables, and using some DAX, I was able to get what is the count of UFO sightings for each state. And if there's a lot of UFO activity in the place you were born, there's a higher chance you popped out of a spaceship. So next thing, what I did was I looked at education, right? From Facebook, I know which school you went to. Also, I was able to get the list of universities with strong astrophysics departments. So these are the list of top astrophysics departments. Again, using relationships in PowerPivot, I was able to determine whether you went to a school that has a good astrophysics department, right? I think aliens like to keep a tab on what research we are doing about them. It was the same with work and likes. So if you are working for NASA or SpaceX, there's a good chance you are an alien. Or if you like the reality shows that I mentioned, you are an alien as well, right? So what I did was I used some cube formulas and let me show the formula bar. So I used some cube formulas to get the ranked list of aliens, determine the alien score using some mathematical equations, and I have my list of aliens. And what I did, again using cube formulas, is I put this list into a report, and it's a self-sorting list of aliens, right? So what I can do here is I can assign different scores to the different metrics, right? So for every 100 UFO sightings in hometown, you get 10 points, as an example. And in this list, I can see that there are lots of people having the same number of alien sightings. So maybe it's not as much as a useful metric as I thought it would be. So I can go here and change the number of points, and the list sorts itself. This is not a pivot table, not a table, just formulas in Excel. What I can also do is change things for alien likes. So I assign more points, the list sorts itself. I can even have slicers working on this inside cube formulas. So if I want to see just the movies and the TV shows, I can see that Lynn is the most probable alien, right? Now, all this is interesting stuff, but it's not really fun, right? So let's make it a little bit more fun. So right now we have the list of aliens, but let's see what aliens really like using live data from Facebook. How about that? So I have here an application that I built in HTML5 that allows me to embed this list inside Excel web application, inside a web page. And now I log in into my Facebook account.
It's his birthday twice. He uses it on every site.
So, okay, so this is live data coming in from Facebook. So I see that Bev, who is a close friend of mine, likes Synergy aircraft. And I can look at another candidate, Eric, who likes X-Files and something like the Blade Runner. So this guy is most likely to be an alien in my book. So I don't know, but someone's been calling me for the last 5 minutes, and looks like it's Eric. So I'll just take the call. Sorry. Hey, Eric, what's up? Oh, he's not happy that I revealed his name. And like I said, there's likely to be some repercussions. And he's asking us to watch TV because there's some kind of invasion going on, apparently. So we have a new feature in Excel that allows you to watch TV. Did you know that? Okay, so let me start.
All of the features that you've been requesting over the years, this is why we didn't do them.
Okay, let's watch what's happening. Oh, no! The aliens are destroying our planet. And because it's Excel, I can actually defend us against the alien attack. This is conditional formatting in Excel, and we are using it to create a game here.
So now it appears the world will actually end in 1982, judging from the graphics.
Okay, that's it from me.
That is awesome. So thank you very much. Only the coolest of cool kids get to work on the Excel team. They said no thank you. Next, I would like to hand things over to the other cool kids, which is Julian Allen from the reporting services team. And let's see if we can remember which one of these buttons we have here. We will flip and flip. That doesn't look like Julie or Allen.
That's not exactly right. So,
this is Julie. Yeah,
you got us mixed up?
Julie, Allen, yes.
That's right.
All right, AV folks at the side of the room, somebody holler at me. Count three. There's one that's labeled Julie.
I'm special.
There we go.
Awesome. And just so you guys know, no one besides Julie and Alan have seen the demo that they're doing. We asked and they said no, so this is like super duper top secret. I think they're aliens.
No, we're not aliens.
That's what they all say.
Really?
We don't believe in that. We don't believe in that.
Just to repeat the question for the rest of the crowd, he said, that's what they all say.
You see, we are from the analysis services team. We believe in data. We need facts. So yeah, we were told the world will go under. Really? Come on. So we went out and found loads of data. Actually, since the last TechEd, Alan and I have been working on some pretty massive analysis.
Right. We've been out in the field researching, trying to figure out what might be going on here. What could be causing this? Why do we have this prophecy out there?
Yeah, and there's some theories, right? What are the theories, Alan?
Well, you know, some of the things where we started to look were, you know, I had this theory that the core of the Earth has started to rumble a little more. You know, I sometimes wake up at night and it feels a little bit like the ground is shaking and there's no earthquake
reported. Did you hear that?
I don't know, something's going on there. But we didn't really find any significant data there. We looked at the melting poles. We thought there's a lot of theory that, you know, maybe it's not even theory, it's reality, that the oceans are rising.
That's probably real.
Yeah, because the ice at the poles are melting. However, even though that's probably true, we actually found something super surprising related to that. We found that it's not really the water that's rising, it's actually the ground that's sinking. We made a lot of measurements from the core of the inner Earth and out to the surface at different places in the world. We found some super interesting stuff that we're going to share with you here today.
Yeah, so we took a really high level. So we have used, obviously, Power Pivot, the tabular project model that can contain millions of rows. So we have done all our preparations, I guarantee you. We're obviously just going to show you the findings to not bore you with all of that model building. Really interesting theories here. So we looked at overall at the world.
Just one thing though, Julie.
Why not?
Are there any people from the Netherlands in this room today?
Good. Stay tuned.
Just because we're from Denmark, both Julie and I, just so you know. I don't know if anybody...
Okay, I saw them. I know who they are. So we then sit down, we looked at all the, first we started with the world, looking at now not the water levels rising, but the elevation changing because of the earth sinking. That's pretty hard data to come by, but wait on, we found them. But first we started to look some at elevation, and we just took some basic data. And obviously we're using Power View to show you the visualizations of our findings. So first, we want to just do a very simple chart showing elevation and different states in the U.S. Oops. Eventually, anyway. Can we move that?
We can move it a little bit.
This is just waking up. It's Redmond time. So let me just make that a little bigger and do a column chart. And these are just the basic things. I have a nice visualization, a single click. I can change how we sort it. Here are all the elevations for each of the states. And look at that, Florida,
yeah,
right there. It's hard to see, but Florida, there's obviously other states as well that some are even underwater, but we can't rescue them at this point anyway. They are under. So we're going to look at Florida.
So you're saying that Florida is the Netherlands of the U.S.?
I have no idea how you arrived at that conclusion, but yeah, we can say that.
I'll show you the
it's very
low. Okay. So we want to take a closer look at at this local area.
Right, and this data here is basically just publicly available geological data we downloaded, right? Mm-hmm. So and you can go home and do this on your own if you feel like it later on. But one of the interesting things that happened to us during this research, we obviously went through a lot of large amounts of data to find trends and see what correlations we might find between different happenings. And one of the things we found that actually made the most sense was the findings of a fifth grade class here in Florida that had done a little project where they had put up sensors inside a theme park here in Orlando, actually, so where we're going on Thursday for the party, so Universal. And this is just a simple data set. They put up five or six different sensors around the park so they could measure the elevation at those spots over a couple of years. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're seeing here is simply that data. If you can read it, you've got the date of the measurement, you've got the elevation at that point in time, and the spot that this was taken at where that sensor was positioned.
So you know how we have taken Power Pivot and we make it so easy to use that even fifth graders can use it? They didn't know about Power Pivot, but we took their data, so we just continue the story for them.
Right.
So what else happened with this data?
So then when we had this data, we since there's more than, I think there's, what do we have here? We have about a year's worth of data for about 3 years. We felt that we were getting to amounts of data that we couldn't really handle in Excel, so we thought we were probably going to build a server-based model.
Yeah.
So we did that. So I'm going to go over here. Oh, sorry, yeah, thanks, Julie. Before I do that,
come on, Ella, let's
I'm going to quickly just show you where we started. So we had the data in Excel like this. We've got this the student data on the left-hand side here, and then we spent a little bit of time munching other data sets we had collected to correlate to those same five spots. So we just took the closest longitude latitude we could find in those data sets, and those data sets are, one is a data set from Universal about how many riders on average are on a given ride on a given day. And the next one is how windy it was around those areas. So with those two data sets, plus a little bit of extra information here that I'm going to go into a little bit of detail on, we created a model. Before I go into showing you the model, I quickly want to mention this, talk a little bit about this mass movement column we have here, because we found that some of these rides are very like moving around and throwing people up in the air and going around in loops and things like that. And as we looked into that, we saw some correlation there between like rides, areas where rides are positioned with many movements that they actually might contribute more to this devastating evolution of the ground sinking. So we included that data. Over here we have our model, and you'll open up
there
the right one.
Go.
There we go. So it's very simple. We imported this elevation data. We have the riders data of how many riders per certain amount of time, the wind, and we have the data about the individual rides that you just saw in Excel. I went in and created a couple of lookup formulas from the one table here to make it easier to do the analysis later on. So I'm just looking up for each spot, each date, the number of riders and the wind for that particular. It's very, very simple. We create a relationship to the rides table so we can, instead of showing spot one, spot two, we can show the actual ride name. It's a very, very simple model.
Yep.
We've got that in place. Let's go back and take a look at it.
Yeah. So now that we have kind of built a model, we have merged the data, cleansed them up, they're ready for our analysis. And now we were actually able to get a little bit step further than the fifth graders were. So here what you see they found was each of the spot locations inside Universal, the date, and the elevation. Now with the new table that we have created, we will be able to add the number of riders. Whoops. It's so interactive that I can't control it. I can add the number of people visiting each of the rides, and I can add the wind. So it is just to show you how this all came into a single table. So now there's some, basically six very interesting spots in Universal. And I'm not from here, as probably quite obvious on my voice. So I was thinking maybe not all of you are familiar with Universal either. So I used the visualization capabilities in PowerView to just show you what these spots are, okay? I have a feeling that some of you may be going in that area later this week, so it's good to know what we are really looking at. So I can go in here and look at the rides, and I can add, for example, the name of the different rides, as well as some images. Really, one of the things that PowerView is really strong is adding images to your visualizations, and I can quickly change this into a card view. So here you see some rides, the Dragon Challenge, etc. But I want to also look at the number of people taking each ride now that we spend years collecting this data. So I'll add the ride name and the average rider per day, also because this can be hard for you to see, but by adding a column chart, it's really easy for you to see. I can now use this to cross-filter. I can look at the ET ride. That's probably pretty obvious what that is. Not a whole lot of users on that ride, but there's other, like the Harry Potter Forbidden Journey, lots of users in there, a lot of visitors. So here I can kind of just browse through the different rides that you may want to have in mind later this week.
And maybe these images can help you prepare for Thursday, see what looks scary and what doesn't, what you might want to try even. So.
Exactly. So, with that...
Yep. Let's go and look at the core of the problem here and see what we can figure out. So, what I'm going to do now... As you saw the data model, and we're going to try and find out, you know, is this actually even going to be a problem? So maybe the elevation may be decreasing, but does it really mean anything? Are we actually going to be in trouble in any amount of time that we care about? So what I'm going to show you is another visualization here. I'm going to add elevation, date, and the ride name so we know which ride we're looking at. And I'm simply just going to give you a line chart here. Okay, let's make it a little bit bigger. Okay. Interesting.
What is the date?
That looks a little bit. What do you see? What is that date? 12/21. Okay. So there was some that 12/21 date was pretty suspicious there. It actually looks like there's some of these points in the park will be below water level around that date. So maybe there's something about it.
I think what this is really saying, we're not really talking about the end of the world. We're talking about, somebody just got confused. So as analysts, we were right. It's obviously not true, but it's the end of the land for Harry Potter.
So the Mayans saw Snooki and Harry Potter coming?
Apparently so.
We need more Mayans on our predictive analysis team.
Yeah.
But what happens there?
You've got another interesting point right up here around this time frame. About
May 28th. What happened May 28th?
What happened then?
2010.
Anybody know? In that park?
Thank goodness for internet, for we know why. That was actually the day that the Harry Potter land opened.
Right. This looks pretty scary. It's as if this, whatever this land does, it's really making not just itself sink. You'll see that it even affects these other rides too. So it's kind of had this widening effect on the whole park potentially. So
yeah.
What can we do? I mean, we don't want this to happen, so let's try and figure out what we can do to fix it.
So we thought it would be pretty nice to look at all the correlations, so what makes the park sink right there, and what can we do to prevent it? So let's do some more analysis. We can go in here and look at the root cause. We'll do some different data regions here to use more richness of the analysis. We'll add one chart with average riders and the name, and just quickly, hopefully, change it into a column chart. Let's pick a bar chart just to do something else. So there you go. And we can move this around a little, put it over here. And I want to add the mass movement that Alan talked about before. I have honestly no clue what that is, but apparently Alan knows what that is. So there you go.
It's a very sophisticated problem we came up with there.
Yeah. So we'll add that. And finally, I think, what else? The elevation change. Obviously, we have added this rich calculation language inside the semantic model. So we have added a calculation taking the max change and the minimum to calculate the deltas and the right name. Let go there. So now we should be able to see some interesting stuff. Just so move this one.
Now we have all those factors that we found to be influencing the, as far as we can tell so far with this data.
Yes. I do want to have a bubble level. Chart as well. Right. I love bubble charts.
Right.
So
idea.
Let's just add that. Average riders per day and the mass movement, the rider name, and then the change in elevation. Right. Now we should be able to come up with some conclusions here. So,
okay.
There are some bubbles. So let's have a look. We look at, let's take a little one, the Hollywood Rip Ride Rocket. There you go. Here we see there's not a lot of riders, but there's a lot of mass movement. Obviously, that's the big thingy that throws people in the air. Lots of mass movement, but apparently people are too scared. So there's not a whole lot of people using it, and the elevation hasn't changed in that area, hardly any compared. So we can look at another one.
There.
Yeah, we can look at some other one. Let's just go. Wow, wow, wow. Look at this
hippogriff.
Big guy. The hippogriff. There you go. It has a lot of riders, almost the second most
right.
visited attraction.
Right.
It has a lot of mass movement.
Right.
And indeed, it has a lot of elevation
yeah.
change. So
it's
it
weird.
Actually looks like, based on this analysis, that it's this ride. This particular ride is what will make Harry Potter Land go under.
So the conclusion we're reaching is that Thursday night, none of the attendees should go there?
No, no. We have, there's some flexibility we can give you, and that's actually the whole point,
right.
that we want to give you some guidelines
right.
when you go to the Harry Potter Land.
Right.
For what are the things you should be thinking
right.
about. So first of all, it has to do with not too much mass. We saw that, right? And the weight. Obviously, we're not going to ask you to go naked. That would just be inappropriate of us. But
especially
you dress
at TechEd.
And that counts for the shoes as well. For the
yeah.
people from the Netherlands, leave your wooden shoes at home. So,
else? And it really does matter. Another thing, because we're talking about mass and the effect on the ground and us stumbling around there, we think that we actually came up with a way for you to kind of spread your mass a little bit, so we're not too many people in a small amount of space. So, even though this is not the most common place to purchase snowshoes, we got a whole truck full in, and we recommend that all of you purchase snowshoes before you go to the party on Thursday night. The other thing is, a more obvious point, just don't stand very close together. One thing
make sure you stand like this.
You could walk around maybe with your arms out a little bit. You could wear a sombrero. All sorts of different creative ideas. We'll actually give prizes for the best idea as we see them Thursday night there at the park. So be aware that you spread your mass.
Mm.
The next thing is,
there's some other stuff that you may want to try and avoid.
Right.
So we do recommend that you try not to eat after midnight tomorrow, and that can counts for all kinds of eating.
Right. Cool.
And
you know what? We created a bunch of sophisticated calculations and what-if scenarios, and it turns out that if we are aware of all these things in our best estimates, we will actually be able to extend the life of Harry Potter Land. So according to our projections, you'll see we're way up and around 6 feet, a little less than 6 feet here, 5 feet, for the Harry Potter Park, the area of the park, if we do these things. So please help us in doing that. You can see that we left the old projections in there to see how much we actually can make a difference. So I think that's think
about
this, and then we're...
Oh, sorry.
Oh, oh, I'm sorry. This... yeah.
Thank you very much. So far we've seen the Excel team, the office team, look at what the actual problem is. What is it that the Mayans saw coming? We saw the analysis services team look at some root causes and things that we might do to change it, to stop the problem, to really prevent this apocalypse from coming. Matt is from the integration services team, and if I understand correctly, he's taking a slightly different approach to the end of the world. So while he cues things up there, I will fumble around randomly with the buttons over here. It's scripted. It's scripted. It's going to be one of these guys. So it's not the one that says Julie.
now it's on. Hi, everyone. My name is Matt. Has anybody seen my previous Power Hour presentations? A couple people? Okay, so I get clapping. Oh, that's really weird. So I'm just going to do, for the people who haven't seen my previous Power Hour presentations, I'm going to kind of extend the story that I've been doing. So my first Power Hour presentation was 2 years ago in New Orleans, TechEd New Orleans. Now, traditionally, SSIS wasn't invited to do the Power Hour, even though we were technically part of the BI stack. SSIS was never actually asked to participate, and the reason for this is people thought SSIS was boring, okay? So I wanted to set out to prove them wrong. Now, at the time, I was trying to come up with an idea for a Power Hour demo, and I was really big into Facebook. I was using Facebook all the time, so I'll just show what my Facebook page looked like. This is me, my profile picture for me of my LARPing days, my live-action role-playing days. I'm dressed up as a druid here. I was one of the cool kids in school, or at least one of the cool druids in high school. So I used Facebook a lot. I'd post interesting things like the, you know, stories about what I was eating and what I was making for dinner and stuff like that. I had a couple thousand pictures of my cat, Mr. Wiggles. Mr. Wiggles is the craziest cat. I just love posting stories about him. I mean, what you know, people just love reading stories about other people's cats. And so I know that. And so I'd post lots of pictures of Mr. Wiggles. I'd post lots of stories about Mr. Wiggles. And despite having the most interesting Facebook page, I had one major problem. And I had no friends. And this would make me so upset, and I'd actually get kind of sad. So what I did, I combined, you know, solving a life problem with my BI Power Hour demo that year. What I did was I created these Facebook connectors for SSIS. I showed off the flexibility of SSIS and the extensibility of SSIS. What I did was I created a Facebook source that would go out and download all my status updates. I had a transform with a really advanced AI that would do an analysis on what my status update is and generate the appropriate comment. And then a Facebook destination that would post those comments back up to Facebook to make it feel like I had friends, okay? So all pretty standard stuff. I'm sure most of you have done this sort of thing before yourselves. But there was a side effect to this presentation, okay? It was like massively popular. I had people coming up to me offering to be my friend, and I got bombarded with friend requests afterwards. Like, just constantly. My Facebook list was basically flooded, okay? And it really changed my whole life. I started getting invited to parties. I mean, I went from hanging out in my apartment with Mr. Wiggles every night to going to parties every night with Mr. Wiggles. And I ended up, you know, a big change of lifestyle. I felt I needed to do something to manage my social life. And so for the Power Hour demo last year, I made use of the cool functionality in SQL Server 2012 to build an enterprise information management solution, an EIM solution, to manage my social life. And I used SSIS, data quality services, master data services, and even threw Stream Insight in there. And it showed off a couple of different packages. So first, I had a friend request processor package. So I had so many friends, Facebook emailed me and said I was slowing down their system, and they capped my friends list at 5,000 people. So if I were to add a new person, I'd have to drop someone off. So I had this really advanced script that would look at the friend request and see if it was somebody I'd want to accept. And if they didn't quite make the cut, I'd send them down to my MySpace destination. Otherwise, I'd add them to my Facebook list, okay? And so the other part of my EIM package that I showed was my social life manager, where I'd post something like, hey guys, I'm hanging out in Orlando tonight, and people would say, oh, come please hang out with me here, and I get all kinds of requests. And so I'd have the social life manager package that would go and read all those things. I'd do data quality, I'd do lookups against MDS to see whether they were a friend or a frenemy, and I'd do some analysis to figure out whether I want to hang out with these people. Okay, so this was really useful. Since then, things have sort of slowed down for me. You know, I don't know if you guys know this, but all TechEd presenters, like, we live rock star lifestyles. Like, we have groupies, there's parties, and it gets tiring after a while. It's really hard to build up a meaningful relationship when you're living this rock star lifestyle that all of us presenters live. So I decided, with the end of the world coming and all, it's probably a good idea to find a date. To find somebody to spend time with. And really, my business manager has really been pushing me.
You have a business manager?
My mom has really been pushing me to go out. Thank you for pointing that out. I went online to do some online dating, okay? And this was my initial profile. Now, this was a very popular profile. I got lots of messages. But frankly, most of them were quite shocking. And while they might have made me slightly curious, I decided I needed more help. Okay, so I turned to business intelligence. So what I found out is business intelligence isn't just about running your business. Okay, you can actually use it to make better decisions entirely. So what I wanted to do was go out and look at all the different online dating sites, and a lot of them publish these statistics, and put together to figure out what is the best possible profile that I could put together. I'm seeing people taking pictures of this. I didn't think people would do that. I really should have thought about this presentation beforehand. Okay. By the way, in the airport last year, I had people calling, hey, you're the BI guy. And I'm like, I'm glad they said BI. And anyways. Okay. So one of the things I found out was your average attractiveness rating for a profile picture really depends on the type of camera you use to actually take that picture, right? So people who take webcam pictures are, on average, less attractive than people who take pictures with high-end, you know, replaceable lens type cameras. Now, this could mean that people who own replaceable lens type cameras are just generally more attractive than people who own webcams. You know, so it's hard, the data doesn't always tell the full story, but I found this was interesting. I drilled in a little more on the camera phone thing, though, and one thing I found out is that Windows phone users are, on average, more attractive than iPhone, and personally, I don't think this has anything to do with camera quality, okay? The other thing is the profile pose. What kind of pose gets the most number of messages, okay? And what I found out is people showing muscles in their profile pose get more messages than anybody else, and they say men are the shallow ones, okay? Posing with animals, you also get a lot of messages. Doing something interesting, you know, and on the other end, people who are drinking or doing, you know, some random travel photo, they're less likely to get messages than other people are. So I started taking all this data into account. The other thing is the number of messages you get versus the attractiveness. This was interesting. So the more attractive you are, the more messages you're going to get up to a certain point. Right? Because if you're too attractive, people think they don't have a chance with you, they're just not going to message you. Now, I was worried that I was falling into that high range where I wasn't going to get any... Why are they laughing? So I purposely...
I made a funny face.
Okay. So I purposely did things to... I didn't want to be too attractive because I wanted to fall into the ideal, right, the ideal loop. So I didn't want to have a perfect profile. One thing my own research found... this is the number of messages you get versus the number of times you mention your cat in your dating profile. Sharp decline if you mention your cat at all. Okay, although if you mention your cat around 4 times, there's a weird outlier there. But so I realized in general you probably shouldn't mention your cat in your online dating profile. So after all this BI analysis, I have an improved.
I voted for that guy.
Yeah, so my online profile, my favorite things are commitment and changing myself. I figure that's what, I ended up getting a lot of messages for this. So let me go into my demo. Now that I'm actually getting messages and I have a really solid profile, I use SSIS to process all these profile information because, of course, I like using SSIS. And let me switch over here. Okay, let me zoom out a little bit. And so what I'm doing here is I've created some custom transformations. Okay, I'm going to do some custom profiling here. So let's just walk through the package first. So I have this online dating source. It's going to go to an online dating site. By the way, like, there's lots of online dating sites, and they cater to different people. At first, I thought I'd find an online dating source that caters to cat lovers. Be very careful what search term you use when you're looking for cat lovers. Okay, you might end up with something a little more extreme than you were looking for. So I don't trust the dating site's profile algorithm, matching algorithm, so I actually created my own matching algorithm that's going to do matches for me, and that's going to redirect. So I ended up picking a technology-focused dating site for technology professionals, so I get redirected, you know, the wrong type of geek, just plain wrong, that people, mommy or my business manager would not approve of, and just people you should stay away from. And so this is going to be live. So basically, anytime I find a match, it's going to go to this display online profile. It's going to pop something up. It's going to pop up the description. It's going to pop up a picture. I'm going to ask you guys to help me decide yes or no on these people. Okay? It's a bit risky that I'm doing it live. I don't know what's actually going to come up, but we'll see.
So what dating site? Never mind. Okay. We'll find.
Yeah. Okay. So running. Okay. I got no matches. Okay. So I actually have some configuration stuff. So let's open up my match. So I have different settings, right, that my business manager helped me pick to find the perfect woman. And okay, so let me just lower. Maybe I'm being too picky. Let's travel distance and income, and I don't really care about height and age. Yeah, okay. So okay, I'll lower all these things. Let's run again. Get some matches. It's processing. And okay, still no matches. Okay. So I created a...
it's hard doing a live demo with an internet feed coming in, so this is risky and should be applauded.
Okay. So, okay, let me just go to my simple configuration tab. You know, really, when it comes to online dating, I find this is the most effective meter, so let's just max out that setting completely and run, and we'll see what we get. Hopefully I have matches. Yeah, I have some matches. Okay. Recently separated, enjoy your travel, show pictures, yes, no, yeah, yes, yeah, okay. So that's going to send them over to a destination I can message. Cat lover, oh, I love cat lovers, yeah, okay, yeah. Good. Too tall for you, so long, tall, dark hair, good, technology.
This sounds promising.
Heavy metal music?
Yeah. That's kind of awkward.
A little.
Yes? No?
No, let's just move along. Okay, red-haired girl, studying software engineer, cool. Hang gliding, cool. Oh, is that a nose ring? Oof. Okay.
Your business manager would not approve of a nose ring.
Yeah, exactly. This is weird. A robot dog? I can't date a robot, could I? No, it's morally wrong to date a robot, isn't it? Oh, no, I can't date a robot. No, that's silly. Whoops. I'll fix that later. So DBA, ETL developer, DBA, awesome. Enjoy moving data fast. That sounds like my kind of girl. Oh, no, Informatica. No. Okay, self-cleaning, enjoy sleeping, back rubs, lying out in the sun, cat lovers only, awesome. Mr. Wiggles? See, he had said he wanted to see other people, but I really didn't think he was serious. I don't think I'm ready for this online dating thing. It's just too much stress. Anyways, that's my demo for today.
Now that is a hard act to follow. So as I'm having a sip and moving over into my demo, I want to mention to the gentleman who is wearing the BI Power Hour t-shirt, if you happen to go back to the hotel bar after this session and you're still wearing that shirt, and someone comes up and offers to buy you a drink, and then someone comes up to buy you another drink, just be aware that it does say BI Power Hour on the back. So. It's a lesson learned in 2008. It was a good year. All right, so different teams have been taking different approaches to the impending apocalypse. So we have identification of the problem, we have looking for solutions, we have a desperate attempt to make your business manager happy. I've actually taken a slightly different approach. So I'm in the process of moving. So this is not related to the demo, sort of, but last year, I talked to Matt, and Matt said, oh, we've got this opening on the SQL Server team. I wasn't on the SQL team at that point, even though I've worked with the product for many, many years. And he said, you would be a great fit for this. Remember his demo. Great fit for this position. You should apply. You'd have to move out to Seattle, though. I moved my entire family out from upstate New York, out to the Redmond area. Matt moves back to Montreal. So no hard feelings, of course, about that. But we've been renting a house. My wife and I have been renting a house. We have just purchased a house, and I kid you not, while I'm in Amsterdam for TechEd Europe, she is moving the house to the new house. So hopefully my keys will still work. At the same time, the data quality services team that I work on, we've recently hired a few new developers. We've got more people on the team than we used to. So this means, you know, hopefully we'll be more productive, we'll be able to get more done, but it also means that in our office space, we're taking up all of the available space, so now there's this whole office juggling shuffle thing that's going on. So people are packing up and moving around, trying to make sure that the people who are doing work are working as closely as possible to the people who are doing the work most related to them. So I don't have to walk to the other side of the building, I just need to walk down. So I've packed up. As you can see, my Viking helmet didn't actually fit in the box, but they told me it wouldn't be a problem. So we're going to be juggling the office around, going from one place to another. The problem is, at the same time that we were starting to plan this move, we were also doing allocations in the bunker. So this is a little known fact. Microsoft has an employee bunker. Our federal services division negotiated this with the government. We have space in Cheyenne Mountain, so when the alien apocalypse comes, we will actually be ready. We'll be able to move team members in there and survive. But unfortunately, we allocated space in the bunker before those new developers joined the team, so now we have one set of bunker spaces and a larger set of employees. So I got an email earlier this afternoon from my manager, and she basically said, look, you know, here's the list of employees. Odds are, you know, we're the data quality services team. We know that data is often dirty. There's problems, there's duplicates, there's things in the data that you don't expect. Even master data can sometimes have problems, right? So she has asked me to go, oh, sorry, not online dating. I copied Matt's slides. We actually want the offline matching. So dating and matching are very similar. So I expected to get a better laugh for that one. So. This is actually kind of like high school all over again. You're at the front of the room, and yeah. So this is the list that I got, and we have a list of the various team members, their first name, their last name, their role. We've got developers, testers, and program managers, where they live and where they work in the building that they're in. So this is the data set that I have to work with, and one thing, you may not realize this, we are a very Matthew-heavy or Matt-heavy team. So I actually go by Matthew as a disambiguation tool. So I'm Matthew, everyone else is Matt, and we'll let them worry about that. So, but essentially, I need to work with this list, and I'm going to come into Data Quality Services. So I'm going to spin up the Data Quality Services client, come into a knowledge base that I have built. I'm going to come into matching policy. And I didn't have a chance to finish this before the demo, so I'm sort of going to be tweaking and tuning as we go. I hope you'll bear with me here. But basically, I put together this matching policy, and I have a set of fields. So I pulled in first name, last name, home address, office, and role. I pulled these in. They all have the same weights. There's five fields. They all have 20% each. And I am going to choose start. We're going to let this guy run. So waking up, it'll take a little bit longer than usual. Pull this guy in. Go. Oh, okay. So we're not finding any matches. This is expected, right? So depending on the data that you're working with, if you're looking for duplicates, you're trying to remove the bad records or the duplicate records, often you'll need to work, which is why the DQS tool has this interactive capability. So the business user, someone who is intimate with the data and knows what's right and what's wrong, can use the tool to help them apply their knowledge to things. So let's come in here. Let's see. What do we have? Oh, you know what? Odds are we should not be using home address. Home address is where they live. This is a work benefit, right? So we're going to switch this over to be work address. You know, we don't want to take the home stuff in. You know, work-life balance is one thing, but we don't want to go there. And if we look at the profiler, so we've got some nice statistics coming out. DQS will give you information about how unique or how selective the data in your data set is. Notice that it's saying here that the role is not very selective. And if we hover over here, it says there's a low level of uniqueness. You might not want to use this. So what we're going to do is we're going to come in here and take role and drop this down. I usually have a mouse, but the desk doesn't go there anymore. So bear with me as I am touchpadding my way around. So we'll take this. They say the same thing for office. So we're going to drop that down too. And we'll come back up here. In order, it has to go to 100%, so it's a relative weight. We're going to take first name and push that up. That sounds about right. We'll make our little profiler pane go away. And we'll choose restart. We'll run the
run the analysis over again. Let's see what we've... So it looks like we do have some duplicate data in there. So we have 2 Jing records and 3 MAT records. Notice as well, though, that by default, we've chosen overlapping clusters. So we'll choose non-overlapping. We'll run this again. And the overlapping versus non-overlapping, so with the 3 different MATs, the duplicate data that's in there, they'll have the different combinations of how those 3 duplicate MATs might come in. So we've got 1 duplicate Jing. We've got 1, 2, 3. That is awesome. So I will then go next and finish. I will publish this back into my knowledge base. So essentially, we're taking the definition of these matching rules, how we tell the system to say what's a duplicate and what's not. We publish this in. I'm now going to choose a new data quality project. We're going to call this Survivorship. For people, Survivorship 2, the sequel. Oh, wait. It fits in with the theme. So for those of you who have worked in data quality, Survivorship is the in-joke. The rest of you guys buy the data quality people drinks and we'll explain it to you. And we want to come in here and choose the knowledge base that we're working with. We've got Team Bunker. We want this to be a matching demo, and we will choose next. And for our source, I will choose Excel. We've got that same data, so we will browse out there. There's our bunker staff list. We get our nice little auto matching. We will choose next. And off we go. So here, instead of working to define the knowledge base, we're actually working in a project. Often you would have a different data source or a different data set that you were working with. So I can come in here, yep, Jing Hill, that is a duplicate. And now, this is a tough one. It's hard for me to tell exactly which Matt is going to be a duplicate. We've got Matt Mason, who's been my friend for many years, but honestly didn't accept my online dating request. And we have Matt Lubert, who's the guy on the team who organizes the Friday afternoon cocktail hour. So, you know, honestly, I'm not going to decide right now. I'll send the email out after the session is done. But I just wanted to show how we can use data quality services to data quality services to identify who gets the space in the bunker. How did that slide get there? We need to talk once the demo's done, Matt. So this is what we have for DQS. Hopefully you guys will have a chance to use it, and hopefully you will have space in your bunker too. And at this point, I want to introduce Peter Myers. Peter, I have a mic for you. He turned off my mic again. There we go. So this is honestly a groundbreaking event. So Peter is the first ever non-Microsoft employee to ever present at the BI Power Hour. So Peter and I have worked together on various events. He has not, however, yet learned to keep me away from his PowerPoint slides. So if I understand correctly, Peter, you're going to be looking not at the cause or not at a solution. You're actually going to be looking at why the Mayans believe that the world is ending. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think I'm a bit more of an optimist. All these sessions before me are like, they're just assuming the end of the world is coming, and I'm like taking the stance.
I saw it on Bing.
Well, as a BI professional, you know, I don't trust until I see the data. It has to be this evidence-based approach. And so I'm slightly disappointed in my friends and colleagues here, because it's like, you're just assuming. I'm interested to know from the audience, who actually thinks the end of the year is coming? 21st of December, 2012. And what about the end of the world? Anyone thinks the end of the world is coming? Yeah, before the end of the year. Not one. I don't think I even need to show this. No, I think we're done.
We've got a couple minutes left.
All right. Let me just move this across. I need mouse space. And mouse cord. Oops.
It's like a nest of vipers up here. So that's a strange San Francisco accent as well.
Yes. Well, I think the concept about the difference between kangaroos and wallabies is that I do come from a place further south. Okay. So I'm an Australian. I have been living here for about 3.5 years. Very close to Redmond, so it's been very helpful creating stronger relationships with the product team and working here in the U.S. I'm not here to give you a history lesson, but there's some things that you need to grasp before you can move forward with what I have to tell you. It could be shocking. So first of all, a bit of idea. The Mayans, they're an ancient group of people. They've mastered things like language. They've mastered things like mathematics and astronomy with a high degree of accuracy. This is well before, apparently, we had computers. And yet somehow they worked this out. But arguably more important was that they discovered chocolate. All right? And chocolate was very much considered to be the currency. It was a health product and a divine gift to the gods.
And do you know what the plant that chocolate comes from is called?
I don't know, but it's this thing I've got in the bottom right corner.
Theobroma cacao. It actually means the food of the gods. And who knows that?
Well, this actually makes sense to where my analysis has taken me. Yeah. Because what we discovered was somehow the Mayans just almost disappeared without trace. Almost disappeared. And historians can't even account for why this has happened. But what they did appreciate was that there was a strong relationship between cacao, I'm not going to pronounce that, and the gods themselves. So my speculation is, well, perhaps something happened that decreased the production of the cacao and therefore offended the gods and therefore put them in this doomsday mode. All right. So the other thing to be aware of is that the relationship between cacao and people. So when they talked in terms of population, they talked in terms of how much cacao was required to support the population. All right. So knowing this information allows me to switch across to some data that I have represented here in PowerView that shows the supportable population. Note the time scale. 752 AD is where I've chosen to start. And if we scroll across, we see this shocking fact that historians don't disagree with. Something happened in 950 AD, and we saw this plummet in the ability for them to support their population, and essentially they were decimated. And then we see until maybe around 950 AD, they sort of vanished. And so I'm intrigued by this. I want to know more. And so I'm going to use the SQL Server BI stack, not just one of the products. I think I've got integration services, I've got analysis services with data mining and data models, and reporting services, of which we've already seen two. I have a tabular model that is storing this historically accurate information, and it's giving me right up to 972 AD, and I'm using reporting services PowerView to represent this. So where I'm heading is I want to know, why did the Mayans think 2012, 21st of December? How did they get there? And so why couldn't I use SQL Server data mining with its time series to actually look to see if there's a pattern? Did they see something in their final days and then use that to actually project and therefore know it was a waste of time to inscribe a further calendar into stone?
That makes sense.
All right. So switching across to this project. First of all, my model is represented here, and that's all good. I like the fact that I built a timetable that uses AD. I don't think I've ever had the need to do that.
Do you know what AD stands for? It's after data mining.
Oh, yes, of course, of course. Thanks for the reminder. I'd almost forgotten. And if it was relevant, I was really looking forward to the need to build a hierarchy that would have levels of millennium, century, decade, and year. But it didn't quite prove relevant or worthy of my time for this project. Second, I have a table. And there's all those actuals. By the way, these are actuals. They were found inscribed in stone inside the temples in remote corners of the remote parts of the Mesoamerican territories. So it's pretty easy at this stage, because then I switch across to a second project. I already have a data source view that is bringing in this actual population, and then I go ahead and create a new mining structure. So using the time series algorithm, this is part of analysis services, based on this data source view, I'm going to ask it to go ahead and predict actual population, and we'll call this not the actual population anymore, it's going to be the forecast population. Let's test what the Mayans were thinking. And then I go ahead and deploy that to the server. And in deploying it, it's going to go ahead and process. What it's doing as a process is detecting patterns. And if it finds a pattern, we're able to then use that for predictive purposes to see what date SQL Server anyway thinks the end of the end of the world would be as far as what the Mayans were thinking. All right, so switching across to the viewer, we get to see that there is some sense of decline. And these are the years after death down here. And I could very tediously do these prediction steps.
We like
but
tedious,
you know,
right?
I think I would need to do, you know, how many more? 1,100 more. There's actually an easier way. Let's just run a prediction query against this model. So predict the time series for that actual population, comma, 1,100. And that's going to go ahead and predict out 1,100 steps into the future to tell us where it arrives at. And again, this is a little tedious, so I've got a better way. Let me just show you the query. If I add the flattened keyword, it becomes a regular relational set. And so with this query, it's actually easier for me to go ahead and use this integration services package. And all this package is going to do, it's just going to clean up, in case I ran this as a practice of this demo, the data flow here, connecting to analysis services, goes ahead and executes that select flatten statement. And then it goes ahead and it populates my main population table. And then back down here, I go ahead and process the tabular model, so then I can return to PowerView and see the results. And there we have it, 1,100 rows, prediction has taken place, that data is now stored in my model, and I can then switch back to PowerView, and we can refresh. In addition to refreshing, let's take a look at that forecast. And so what we see is the red here is the forecast that's just been added, and sure enough, we see this decline over time. And I know that might be a little tricky to see, so what I'm going to do is apply a filter. It says, go and show me any years that start with 19 or start with 20. What do we see?
They were right.
I know.
All right, doubters. So we've got the data. We've got the technology. Peter has proven pretty much authoritatively that the Mayans were correct. So thank you very much, Peter. And
I know I haven't finished.
You're not done.
There's actually more. Well, what does this say about SQL Server, do you think?
That it rocks.
That it's accurate.
That it was built by Mayans.
It was built by Mayans. Right. So this algorithm, we actually thought the time series was a more recent algorithm, but I guess now we can actually give credit to the Mayans. They actually got it right. I'm a little bit suspect with this as well. I mean, what did the Mayans really know?
Astronomy, astrology, math, the other stuff that you had on your slide.
I'm guessing there's other things they must have overlooked, because I'm still a skeptic. I don't believe this. And so I did a little bit more research, like what's really gone on. We saw that this collapse happened in 950 AD. But, you know, things that I'm guessing they didn't really see or see well enough was that, you know, in the 16th century, the Spanish came in and they discovered for themselves that there was chocolate. At first they thought it was disgusting, but then they discovered how they could process it and get the true flavor from it. And then it's found its way into Europe by the 18th century, and the aristocracy got hold of it. And then what happened was these cacao plants were spread around the world. They were regional to South America only. Now we find the biggest producing countries are actually Africa, the Ivory Coast and so on. And so I factored this into my model because I wanted to see what would happen if the Mayans knew that this was actually going to happen. Okay. In addition, something striking happened in 1964, which I think was incredibly influential, and we'll see this, because the data that I went and collected, which I can introduce through a second package, so let me execute this, it's going to load modern actuals in, and then we can compare them in PowerView. So remember, since the 18th century, something happened. Let's take a look. So I'm going to go ahead and clear this filter, and we will bring in the revised. And what it's showing is something remarkable. See, revised is the yellow.
Does not look good.
And so there was a certain point in time where it just decided to depart from this doomsday crash down to 2012 to the fact that it's never really going to happen. This is the outcome that I was looking for. This is the outcome that I liked.
So I understand that the Mayans didn't have all the data, so their rock algorithms didn't see everything. But you're saying that some scientific study published in 1964 has changed about cacao cultivation? What is this paper?
Absolutely. I was going to ask the audience, has anyone worked it out? Something really, really important happened in 64.
Are there any food scientists in the audience?
I have food to prompt the scientists. Oops. I have chocolate as incentive. Does anyone know? It'll be so obvious when they get the answer, I think. All right, so it was a famous paper. I'll share with you, it was actually a paper that was written for a very broad audience, largely for children. Okay, and that book was? All right. And so this book actually prompted a demand for chocolate. All of a sudden, kids that used to hate it couldn't get enough of it.
So you're saying that the Mayans were wrong? The world is not going to end, and we have Roald Dahl to thank for the world not ending?
Correct. One 20th century British author, Roald Dahl, saved the world. And that's pretty much the evidence that I have, and I rest assured that I'll be here at TechEd next year.
So if you guys would want to come up and take a bow or wave or something, this is the end of the show. We actually ended on time, which is amazing given the number of moving parts. I do want to stress that we have related content, where pretty much anything that's related to SQL Server or BI is related content. Tonight is the community night. Most or all of us will be downstairs in the Ask the Experts session. So if you want to come and buy us a cocktail or a chocolate bar, you may certainly do so. Lots of track resources available online. The one thing that I definitely want to stress is that your evaluations count, because if you fill out your evaluation on the TechEd website, you get a chance to win an Xbox. So let us know what you thought. Let us know what we can do better next year. Let us know what you loved, what you hated, and so on. And we'll look for you guys down at the community night at the end. So thank you very much. Thanks for joining us.